that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Oh, and Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find it flick that monster Boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Boogaloo! Welcome back, my friends. We are here. It is season 5, Astronuts of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. We are ready to talk about space rage. As always, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. Happy to be chatting to you. And I am joined by my friends. I've got Jack Hall, Mac Jack Hall in the house.
The Mac Daddy, Mac Hall, I like it.
Mac Hall, yeah. All right, moving on. We got Jim Cotta.
I am happy to be here, and a hearty hello to all of my fellow residents of New Botany Bay.
You know, I considered saying that to beat you to the punch, but I decided to let you have it.
Thank you for letting me have the punch.
And finally, we got the big puncher. We got Nick Boxer.
Fuck you all.
Fuck you. There you go. That's half the script for Space Rage. All
yes,
right.
Yes. That is my Michael Perez lines for the first half of this movie. He just repeats that phrase over and over again.
Yeah, he's a,
for no
he's
apparent a, reason.
He's a very bad man, and he wants you to know it, that he is a bad man.
Would you like a piece of cake? Mr. Granger, fuck you. Just over and over again.
All right, well,
tell everybody about the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. I'm actually have to call an audible on this one because I finished this movie and thought something went drastically wrong and I needed to figure out what the hell did. So I'm going to read you the premise directly off of Wikipedia, and you guys can tell me if it's correct. 2 centuries in the future, a dangerous lunatic named Grange is sentenced to a penal colony, Botany Bay, on the planet Proxima Centauri 3. There's a bounty hunter and an ex-policeman who team up to prevent him from escaping. Now, I don't remember any teaming up.
Let me read you the IMDb.
Oh, good. If we do this by,
In this sci-fi Western film set 200 years from now, a bank robber, Grange, is captured and sentenced to the penal colony on the mining planet Proxima Centauri 3, where he meets bounty hunter Walker and the Colonel, a retired policeman from L.A. who was considered the best of his kind. Grange is a dangerous lunatic, and Walker and the Colonel must team up to keep him from escaping. So it must have happened because it was written twice. It must have been a team up.
Well, in that case,
I don't.
Maybe we did watch the wrong movie. I didn't see any teaming up.
Here's the thing. I wish we had watched another movie. This is a movie. Last one we talked about how Planet of the Vampires is one of the best science fiction films I ever had, and I want to thank you, Jim, for that. And you made up for it with this sucker, didn't you?
I liked it.
Well, that's good. Somebody had to.
Did anyone else think that Michael Perret, Grange, the dangerous lunatic, was going to switch sides? I thought for sure he was undercover for the first half of the film.
I spent the first, I'd say about 50 minutes of this 75 minute movie. Probably.
Like, when's the character turn going to happen? Because he has to team up with a bounty hunter, and we have to go after the evil warden.
He gets the top billing, right? He's Michael Pare, you know, so he gets the top billing. So you're thinking he's going to be an anti-hero. It's about 50 minutes in when he just kills some more people. You go, no. He's just a bad guy.
there's the first thing
I thought was some sort of setup or something when he kills a bunch of people at the beginning. I thought there might have been more to the story.
Because there was a jump cut there. That's edited footage. Right there. They did that in Total Recall. That's a Total Recall moment.
Talk about this editing. Stan, go.
I actually don't really have a big problem with the editing. There's some poor choices. I'm going to suggest that the editor was left with a big old batch of coal in their stocking from the director. I think that the director did nothing. The shots are poorly framed, poorly executed. It's a general.
Was this a TV director? Like, I just have a feeling. Like, it looks a lot like.
Yeah, it's got that A team.
Yeah, it looks like V or the A team or that kind of directing. The director apparently a stunt coordinator. He directed two things, and his IMDb has two credits for directing and 239 credits for stunts.
I can well imagine that. That's because awesome. it's all about I think, like, the attempt to do something was there, but just the execution really didn't work out in that regard. And I think that, Jack, is really what threw you off on the editing, is just the fact that when I look at these shots, I'm like, well, when I see the shots, why would you shoot it like that? It's not why would you put it there. It's why would you shoot it like that?
It's not the editing. It's the composition choices is what you're saying.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, there was a lot of times where I thought that scene's not done yet, but they decided to cut away from it anyways.
Well, who's to say that the director shot something that finished it?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, the guy's a famous second unit director also, but, you know, keep him there.
It is interesting. I had the same experience with waiting for the heel turn. Is that what they call it in wrestling when you're.
Yeah, the heel turn. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
you're waiting for the baby face turn. He was the heel already.
Heels when you turn bad. All right. Yeah. All right. I learned something today.
Mark it off. That's your one for the day.
Two. He's up to two.
Yeah, I'm gonna learn.
No, that's right.
That's my new goal. I'm gonna learn one every episode now. I'm gonna learn something new every episode. That is entirely Michael Pare. I have never seen Michael Pare play a bad guy. He's Eddie Wilson. He's, you know, Streets of Fire. So many action movies. And I've never seen him play a villain, and so I'm waiting for him. I'm waiting for the same moment.
How many films do you ever think of where top billing is the villain?
Yeah, and we get three quarters of the way through this film before you realize that he was always old guy. Richard Farnsworth is the hero of the story.
Yeah, for sure. I
wondered about that, if there was a change, because the bounty hunter character was definitely being set up as the hero, and then he just gets shot. Did he walk off the set and they decided they had a grandpa character? I actually went back and rewatched them in this film, and they do share one scene, so that can't be totally the case.
Well, and it does say,
but the grandpa character doesn't interact with anybody. Well, other than one character that's an Irish dude that doesn't interact with anyone in the main story. I kind of figured that the star walked off the set and they just called the audible and went, okay, let's just grab our most famous guy we can get and, like, have him kill off the bad guy. It was weird.
I mean, Eddie the Cruises is a personal favorite, and Michael Pare, I've always been like, I never understood why he wasn't a bigger star, and now I get it.
Yeah, held back by not being a very good actor. That was kind of his Achilles heel.
Apparently.
There is no amount of acting that could save this movie.
Richard Farnsworth couldn't act his way out of it.
My biggest, for me, I think what I found was that I didn't give a shit about anybody else. I was cheering for Michael Pare. I'm like, yeah, fucking kill everybody, dude. Just escape. You are by far the most interesting person on this world. So you might as well kill them off because I like you more.
It is Fuck true you. That the, yeah, it is true that the moment, like at the very early when he's in court and they say, "Can you please state your name for the record for voice identification for the record?" And he goes, "Fuck you," but you immediately like him. Like that's a total anti-hero thing to do, right?
There's just a lot of so many moments. Like again, this is a movie that follows a fairly coherent, I guess, somewhat coherent storyline.
Well, that's the thing, right? After that, he goes into the prison, and the first thing he does is finds the biggest, meanest, baddest dude and picks a fight with him and beats him in a fight. And in one of the more entertaining parts of the movie, again, total anti-hero thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And then he just works to escape. That's it. Yep. That's the rest of his.
Like I say, it isn't after till he escapes.
That's a misunderstood, wrongfully accused. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Until he escapes, and then he just viciously kills some innocent people, including like, and they're like, "Oh no, wait, I was wrong. No, he's
well." Mad. This movie has one of my pet peeves in films. So it has. I assume that it has the woman because it needs a woman, and it has a kid because of no good reason. There's really, truly no good reason that there should be a child in this movie.
Because there's a kid because there's a kid in Shane, a kid in every like John Wayne movie. Because this is very, very, very much Western in space.
That's true.
Killed the kid too, didn't he?
Nope. No, it was just the wife. Just the wife.
Yeah.
So the wife and of course our the bounty hunter husband, which that character was the John Laughlin Walker character. You really truly think that he's going to stand up as something, but nope.
Well, he's built up as the best bounty hunter in the universe. He's built up so you think he's the guy who's the hero going to take down. Like he's built up for and then he dies. Like that's the big plot twist. Spoiler alert. But hey, then again, by us telling you this, it might keep you from watching the film, which is doing you a favor. So yeah,
and they tell you, they basically tell you, I mean, must be 10 minutes into the movie when you see Richard Farnsworth's Colonel character have a flashback. And then it happens, I think, two or three more times. And tells you exactly how this movie is going to end.
Like 75-minute movie. I think we have to flashback once every 6 minutes.
But yeah, it tells you exactly what's going to happen at the end. By the time it happened, I'm like, oh yeah, this is what's going to happen. Okay, good. Good stuff.
So Richard Farnsworth, he was injured when his double barrel shotgun was out of ammo and bad guy got the drop on him, and we see that flashback, I think, every 35 seconds for the whole film.
That was a flashback? I thought it was a precog type dream. I thought he was seeing the future in his dream.
Well, it is a nightmare. Like it's a nightmare if something happened. Like
it took me forever to figure out that this had actually happened. I thought it was just because here's the thing.
And his solution was just to carry more bullets, right?
But no, but he invented something.
That's where I'm going. Like that's where I'm going is that he doesn't do that. he comes up with this like speed loader thing instead of just getting a gun that fires more than two shots.
Yeah,
his solution is to come up with this mechanical thing to quick load a shotgun instead of loading before you step into to take aim. Like there's a lot of simpler solutions than the way
it did take two shots to put the bad guy down.
The thing is, it's a it's a situation where, like you say, he gets the jump on somebody, then he goes to shoot this criminal or to tell him to freeze or whatever, and finds out he doesn't have any bullets. Looks and you get the close up show of him opening and going, no bullets. And then the bad guy in the dream turns and throws a knife at him, and it lands right in his heart. And yet he died, which is why I thought it was not real. Like, I was like, because nobody survives a knife directly in the heart.
This is 200 years in the future, man.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, it's 200 years in the future. I could tell that, though, from the rest of the sets and special effects. So
I have
200 years in the future.
I have written down here Michael Perry doing a space robbery in a space mall wearing space gym clothes.
I want to visit that building. I want to know if it still exists. the bank he robbed, which I don't know if there's a lot of banks with like that you have to like, you know, travel up 10 flights of stairs to
like all escalators, yeah.
That was a lot of escalators.
The Michael Perry character. Thank you, Grange. So the whole movie I'm sitting there the whole movie, this guy who like throws a knife at him is kind of in silhouette. It's not like a really good shot of him. I'm wondering if it was him and it wasn't.
Oh, if they had done the Batman, the Tim Burton Batman thing, where it's just like, oh man, you mean Michael Barre killed him, or you know, ambushed him in the first place? I had that thought myself. Yeah,
they have the exact same situation happen again at the end of the movie in the climax, where he's got the shotgun and it's out of bullets, and Michael Barre pulls out a knife, which is bugging the shit out of me because he throws away his gun to pull out the knife. And he's never used a knife for the rest of the movie. He never set this up in any way.
Well, he did say he was out of bullets.
Oh, yeah, because there's only
four. No, he killed another guy with a knife.
What?
He killed the Irish guy with a knife.
He did.
Oh, okay. By throwing it?
Actually, I believe it was
actually by
screwdriver,
throwing,
but it was a knife-like motion he made.
He totally threw a knife and killed somebody. So
yeah.
All right, I don't even remember how great you guys remember.
No, the less you remember about the Irish guy, the better. But
oh, the Irish guy, yes. Oh, yes, that's right. So there's two other bounty hunters on the planet, an Irish guy and Boomer, and apparently, just Boomer decided to not try and catch Grange. The Irish guy with the worst accent ever.
He was afraid Grange was going to steal his Lucky Charms.
Yeah, for sure.
He shows up to give the Richard Farnsworth, the Colonel character, some help. I think, what is it he says to him? He goes, "Looks like I thought you might be in a spot of trouble. Looks like you may have been. I may have been wrong." And Farnsworth goes, "You are wrong."
Yeah.
And then he immediately dies. I kind of like.
I did have that thought, though, of like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Like, Walker's on high alert. The entire prison colony is escaping and revolting. And this guy's like, you know what I should do? I'm going to find the Colonel.
Why did Boomer, the guy who looked like Boomer from the original Battlestar, why didn't he show up too? Why did he not come with the Irish guy? Because they were two peas in a pod the whole movie until the end when just one of them shows up. Like, did they run out of room on the budget for one of them to pick? Toss a coin or what?
Well, maybe they were just busy that day.
Did anyone else think the prison colony, other than the barracks, which were awful, think that, you know, the actual living conditions outside of the barracks were kind of nice? I mean, they had trees,
I had a real trouble.
They never really established that this was an awful place to be. Well,
it's a prison planet, apparently. Yeah, except for there's all these people living around there.
Yeah, yeah. There's people that live there, like in a society that's around it. And I'm like, wait, if somebody told me, okay, so Stan, we're creating it. There's a whole new planet out there for you. It's going to be a prison colony. But, you know, and the prisoners, no, they're not going to actually be locked up. They're just going to work in a mine. Why are you going to lock them up? Well, because it's okay, because there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go. Yeah, but why should I live there? Because I'll tell you where the prisoners can go. They can go where I live.
Especially since the only job apparently you can have on the planet is to be a miner.
Yeah.
There might have been plot holes.
It's possible.
Well, there was hookers, and somebody had to work. I mean, that fancy dinner party looked quite nice.
It did look really nice.
Yeah, there had to be, like, So we have hookers, we have caterers, and we have miners that have to live on this
planet. Maybe it's just a monetizing idea. Like, you've got a prison planet part, and you have a resort, and that's what pays for the, you know, the upkeep of the prison.
I'll tell you, that's
or
not
vice versa.
That ain't much of a resort. Like, seeing those buildings, I mean, that's like your Westward world style. You want to go to the Old West? Well, do it on New Botany Bay.
Yeah, those weird pyramid buildings. Like, it feels like that was a location they found somewhere. Like, I mean, there's way they would have built that for this.
No, they didn't build anything for this.
So what was this thing? Like, it's like three pyramids next to the water. Like, it's... I'm going to spend a lot of hours on Google Earth trying to find these.
Well, that was just, I think that was totally just a happy accident on their part, finding something that it's just like, hey, this is a nice looking building and we can shoot here. Sweet. Do it.
I love
it.
That
it's a... I don't know.
The producer owned it.
Now, do we know anything about the production of this film?
No, like, you can't find anything.
Like anything.
About this
I've
movie.
Looked online. There is no trivia. I mean, even the Wikipedia page has a premise, but no plot section.
No, all it mentions is, all it says is that the who's in the soundtrack, which we haven't talked about yet, and that it has like a bunch of different titles, you know?
No, there's nothing else here. Amazing. I've never seen a Wikipedia entry this sparse for a movie that apparently has people in it that I've heard of.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Farnsworth, and wasn't he nominated for an Academy Award at one point?
For sure.
Not for Space Race.
Not for Space Race, no.
Straight Story?
Yes, Straight Story.
I think so, yeah. That sounds right. Yeah, just incredible. Yeah, this movie was different. Stan, the soundtrack, go. Blood money!
blood money! Blood money.
Blood money.
I couldn't tell actually for the longest time. I thought they were singing Nine Lives for a while, and then it was just like, oh no, it's Blood Money. Oh, okay. Well, that makes even less sense. But it seemed like for the first 30 minutes, that was the only song that they actually played. And then after that, they decided to play a whole bunch of other songs. I'm not going to suggest that any of them are particularly good. Some of them aren't bad.
But none of them, it's not like any of them are like, it's not like there's a theme, like it's a style. Like, there's different styles of songs. It's whatever they could afford or get for free.
It's a very odd soundtrack, no question. I mean, you're just pumping it out there, and it's just like suddenly a random punk song comes in. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na, and you're like, oh, okay, sure. And then suddenly, like something that belonged to New Year's Evil pops up. Okay, fine.
Yeah,
how many times do they play Blood Money? Is it three or four?
Oh, I think it's
three or four. I think that whoever did Blood Money paid them to have it played more than the other.
Yeah, that I can see that because it appeared a lot in that early.
Either that, or it was like the producer's kids' band or something, because it was and this is not music when. Nothing about these songs, not only did they not fit the movie, they also no way conveyed science fiction in any way, shape, or form. And I don't think there was any other score to this movie that I recall. I mean, maybe there was. I don't know.
I think there was. I think what there was probably like canned score. So, you know, that where you nowadays you'd go online to find that, but back then they probably had a cassette that that gave them a score.
First time I heard the song, I was like, it's not bad, but it's kind of like, you know how you get sick of a song, gets played too often? Yeah, usually that happens over the course of a month, and this movie it happened in 60 minutes.
I think it happened in like 30.
Right, yeah.
I did not hate...
It was weird. I swear to God, this movie was flashback sequence, Blood Money. Flashback sequence.
Well, take any standard Western, like prison Western, and you've got the plot line for it. So, I mean, that's not terribly difficult. Really, from that point, it's just the fact that they tried to make it a little bit sci-fi and added dune buggies that look shockingly like dune buggies from 1980.
I
like those. I thought that was the only thing in this movie that worked.
What?
I'm gonna do it. And I told you so right now. When we started the season, and I did not know that this was in Space Rage, I said one of our modifiers should be space dune buggies, and everyone's like, "There's no way there's gonna be space dune buggies."
No,
so we didn't end up using it.
No, I totally knew there would be space dune buggies, and I would debate your fucking space dune buggies point on this because those are not space dune buggies. Those are fucking dune buggies in space. They do not look at all like space dune buggies.
It's like anything else they did in this movie. It's like they took a regular dune buggy and said, what can we do to make it look like it's spacey? And somebody said, well, let's put this piece of metal right here where it'll stick out oddly and in no way, shape, or form increase either the visual of it or serve a purpose for any sort of reason. Let's just do that and then we'll say it's spacey.
The bad guy got a black one, so
that one of the things I love about this movie is the lack of effort that went into making it look like it's 200 years in the future.
It's unbelievable.
Because not only does the does he rob the space bank in the space mall, and he's just wearing regular jogging clothes. Like it's probably what he wore to the gym that morning. And then we get the dune buggy. When they go to the little town, there's a bar, and there's just an Asteroids video game in the bar.
I know.
It's just a stand-up arcade.
200 years in the future.
I mean, retro's in, but I mean, that seems a bit much.
And it would have been that hard to throw in some like space language. Like he could have said, "Shock you."
Yep. And there's none. There's none. They're not even mining a space thing. They're mining bauxite.
There is just bauxite. There is one shot of a spaceship in this whole thing. That's the only thing that feels spacey. The weapons aren't lasers, they're guns.
Yep.
Even the we talk about the Walker character. I think they went to him. He said, "Well, what am I going to wear? What kind of space outfit?" And they said, "Well, what do you got?" And he goes, "Well, I have a pair of khakis and a leather jacket I was wearing today." And they're like, "That'll do, but wait, that won't do. No, we need to make it spacey. Hey, I don't suppose anybody has a stupid looking handkerchief we could tie around his neck. Then it'll be spacey."
Well, all it is, it's true. I mean, as a Western, yes, it truly is a Western. And all they did was add a thin veneer of space on top of it.
Hey, I am just glad that polyester leisure suits come back in the future.
Okay,
and so apparently does Bank Robbing.
Star Wars had that Western Han Solo or even the Battlestar Galactica had that Western feel to it, but still in a space way. This didn't even bother.
I love that the most spacey thing in the entire thing is that the prison uniforms have a giant UPC symbol on them, and that's the prisoner number.
Yeah.
But at the time this came out, the UPC symbol was seen as like this, thing of the future of numbering everything, but now it's just, it's just how you scan your can of beans at the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly.
but that's clearly, that's the only indicator that it's the future, is that everything has a UPC symbol.
And the word felon on the back.
Space felon.
Just in case you didn't know.
I would have just added, I mean, if you're going to go, I would have leaned into it and just call everything space, like space bauxite, space felon.
That would have been way better. That would have improved this movie a lot. Yeah, absolutely, in my mind.
All right, well,
just one point of clarification for me. Do you guys think these guys were actually prisoners? Because they make a big deal about that. They didn't like assign him a term to serve or anything like that. They just kicked him off the earth. You're in exile. And they make a big thing about how they're paying the prisoners to work in the mines. Do you think they're actually like,
was it work camp? I mean, one gets paid at prison now.
Yeah.
And like everything else in this movie, it's just exactly the same as now.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know it's vague. Like, I mean, they're not prisoners in the, they're more prisoners in the work camp, like Cool Hand Luke sense. Cause they're in like a, they're in a big room. They can like hustle each other. They can beat each other up. They're not in cells.
But it makes sense because Cool Hand Luke, he knocked over a bunch of parking meters, and Grange killed a bunch of innocent people. So yeah, both would go to a work camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, aside from the spa and resort, it's a really rough planet to be on. So, you know, it's not an easy life.
Yeah, nobody's ever escaped. And then, like, the next scene, some guy escapes.
They're in the midst of an escape. Like the whole rest of the film is an escape.
Lots of people try to escape, but nobody's ever gotten off the planet.
I have one last question before we get into scoring that. Since we're into, can you clarify this for me? Okay, so no one's ever escaped. No one's ever tried to take over the shuttle landing. He can blow up the landing, which strands everyone there. All that makes sense. So if he succeeded in his plan and got onto the spaceship, wouldn't they have like all the time in the world to prepare for him to get back to Earth? Like, I mean, his big plan is to get onto a spaceship and go back to Earth. Like,
well, and he did say that he wants a place to land. So I assume that had to mean on Earth. But still, there's no reason that you couldn't have like, oh, I want a place to land. Okay, you can have a place to land. We're going to have 1 million cops around your place to land, but you can
I just assumed, looking at the technology of the planet, they didn't have any means to communicate with Earth.
Fair enough.
You know,
smoke signals.
I didn't have any problem with that because, well, he didn't strike me as much of a planner anyway.
Everything happened really quick for him. Like he robbed a bank. He got to the prison planet. He
met the tech guy before he was even had a bed yet.
Yeah, he instantly took over everything. And 3 days later, they were escaping. So, you know, all of this, you know, bam, 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 which is really my favorite part of the movie. The fact that it happened quickly.
Well, what if we're all allowed to ask a question for clarification? Mine is, why was it when the wife was introduced and she just like rustled him down? That was never explained. Why was she like this apparently martial arts skill fighter person?
Oh, she totally looked like she was a badass.
They didn't follow that up.
They don't follow up, but I mean, it made sense. It made sense that, you know, if you've brought your family to a prison planet that's really poorly patrolled, and really your whole job is getting people that escape from the base because it happens every day, then yeah, you'd want to make sure they could take care of themselves.
Oh, okay.
Like that made more sense than most things in this movie. But no, it doesn't go anywhere. It's never important later because she's killed 10 minutes later.
Did anyone get the sense the old dude, the ex-police dude, ever worked for the prison? No. Like, I had no idea why he was even there.
Okay, so I already had my question. Okay.
No, I honestly believe that he just left because he wanted to feel somewhat useful, and this was the only place he could.
Because when you leave the police force for almost dying, and you look for some place to go, who wouldn't travel across the universe to be on a prison planet to hang out?
Look at him. He lived. I mean, he had a fucking room where he built weapons. He you don't go into that room because that's my special room. That's, you know, this is a guy that
really thought I would have more of a
say on. He had a bow and arrow. It's 200 years in the future. His technology was a bow and arrow.
This guy lived to hunt criminals. That's about why he was there. He trained Walker to be a bounty hunter.
When it happens, he's reluctant to have to go back out and do it.
Yeah, well, he's retired. He is retired, but it says that he taught Walker everything he knows.
Yeah, he wanted Walker to do the job, and when Walker proved incompetent, then...
Well, I mean, and that's, again, a traditional Western trope.
Yeah.
you know, Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven, like the old retired guy hung up his guns. He wants to be done with this, and he gets dragged back into one last misadventure.
So my question then is, Jack, do you actually watch these movies at all, or do you just?
If you were relying on that IMDb summary, that's a rough time for you.
Because no, given all the questions that you have that are relatively easy to answer, then no, I'm not convinced that you do.
Tell me how much these movies are sticking in my brain.
All right, the words of Michael Perry. Fuck you.
Fuck you. All right, let's go to scoring.
All right, every episode in our search for the ultimate B-movie, we rate each film in five categories, none of which is objective quality. The first category is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
The first 15 minutes of this movie I really loved. I thought, oh man, you know, he's robbing a bank. It's got lots of escalators. Fuck you. You know, all this great stuff. I thought this was going to be a ton of fun. And then it got into the western part on the prison planet that made very little sense. So I got to drop it for that. But it's still a very schlocky movie overall, so I'll give it a 6.
I have to disagree with you there. I'm giving it a 3. This is the big yellow box of space movies. Generic all the way.
Right. I don't know what any of that meant, but sure.
Okay, sorry. In that case,
big yellow box.
Mine okay, is you the big blue that. Box of space movies. So I'll give
you
it a 6.
Both explain to me then what you mean by boxes. What are we referring to here?
If I was to pick a cover for this movie, it would be a giant yellow box, just like they sell stuff at No Frills and discount.
Okay.
Discount right. Generic places.
Okay.
I mean, even the title Space Rage puts you to sleep.
I can't explain Space Rage per se. He's just an angry
Oh,
man.
I mean, well, there's wait, rage, wait, but wait. There's no space.
Here's our sci facts or whatever for the season then. Here we go. The other, also known as A Dollar a Day, because that would have made more sense. Breakout on Prison Planet, Trackers 2180, Trackers, and The Last Frontier.
I would have gone with Trackers 2180 because at least that sounds like a sci-fi movie.
That's true, but this isn't a. But then, what? Why would you have named that this?
because
there's nothing sci-fi about this movie.
Because space crap would have probably not gone over too well.
No, it wouldn't have gone over too well, but it would have at least been honest.
Yeah.
Oh, is it my turn?
Three. Three going with.
Yeah.
Because it was boring. It wasn't good enough to have the schlock appeal. It was boring. It has lots of WTFs, but it's boring.
Well, I'm going to say that Space Michael Perry doing hard time on a space prison planet, mining space bauxite, going up against Space Richard Farnsworth, that's 7.
Hard time. I like the hard
admit,
time.
I have to admit, you make a compelling argument.
Our next category we call More Heart Than Budget.
2.
1. I always gonna give it a 0, but they had that one shape shot of a spaceship. 1. Like, this is the type of movie
why,
that bugs me.
Why didn't this movie have breasts?
It I don't know, them. Because it didn't have hardly any women in it.
Well, yeah, it's a prison planet with hookers, but no breasts. Terrible.
Yeah, but no, this is the type of thing that bugs when you set it somewhere in the future, but make no effort whatsoever to make it in the future in your sets, your what do you call them again? Outfits, like the no effort whatsoever. Hey,
can I change my schlock appeal for no breasts down to a 2, please?
Oh yeah,
I just realized there were no breasts in this movie, and it felt like there should have been.
We allow alterations to your score until we close up the mailbag.
All right,
till we issue the final number.
Breasts would have helped us.
So we have all of the Well, we have all the space dune buggies. We have all of the space earth movers.
Fucking space. You want space dune buggies. They're fucking just dune buggies. They're not space.
And the space bulldozer. Why did they need the bulldozer
to get through the chain link gate that was open?
Well, they didn't need it. They used it to protect themselves from being having the bullets fired at them. I did question when they started stealing the bulldozer. Wait a minute now. Why are you taking the slowest vehicle possible?
Well, they're going to get shot at, though. I mean,
that one got somewhat explained pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's also a classic Western trope. You know, when John Wayne steals the Earth Mover. happens in most of True Grit, I think that happens. The one vehicle that is different and is spacey is the space bus, which is big enough to hold about four or five people. The space bus that gets hijacked, space hijacked, by one of the escaping prisoners, which happens every 45 minutes in this movie. This is the one vehicle that looks spacey, and if you do not recognize it, it is the vehicle from the Logan's Run TV show.
Oh, okay. That makes sense, actually. There's a good piece of trivia. Because I remember when they showed up and they showed all the people, and I'm like, Who sets up a tour of a planet where there's nothing except for rocks and desert and prisoners?
Because they call it a bus, so it's presumably maybe it's moving staff back and forth.
I thought it was a tour bus. I don't know. They seem pretty touristy when I looked at them. One of them had
it's the Universal Studios tour.
So I'm giving it a 4 because I love Logan's Run. Our next category we call what the fuck moments.
I'm gonna point to one that I think for me really stood out. There's several along the way that I find, what the fucky, but the one thing, so there's the point where the bad guys abduct the governor. And so they're standing in the middle of the road waiting for Walker to get to them. So they've got the governor. Walker pulls up or gets close, and he's like, come any closer, and I'm going to shoot the governor. Walker drives right on by them. And rather than shooting the governor, as they said they were going to do, they decided to hop in their vehicles, follow him, and allow him to basically take out 70% of their forces. And I was thinking to myself, why would you not just stay exactly where you are and let the one guy in a dune buggy make a decision to maybe I do have to go after them since that's my fucking job. There's that. And of course there's Irish not doing anything remotely like his job. I didn't actually find this one to be an enormously loaded with what the fuck moment. It was just some stupid moments, so I'm going to give it a 6.
I'll give it a 5 just for the giant leprechaun that seems to pop up every 10 minutes. He was a really bad actor.
Fuck you.
Fuck you.
I think you guys are underestimating the level of WTF on this sucker. I really, really do.
It's just so hard to delineate incompetence and WTF.
Well, this is a prison planet where they throw all the people in this tiny little, all the prisoners in this tiny little place where all the bunk beds and whatever, and they have weapons and whatever. And somebody actually says, the governor, who pretty much might as well have just said, what we have here is a failure to communicate.
Now, was he the governor? I thought he was the warden.
He was the governor.
He's called governor,
yeah.
You'd
think he was the warden.
I think it's probably interchangeable, yeah. I think because it's a penal colony, I think he would be the governor of the colony. I think that's how it was in, the real Botany Bay.
Yeah. Now he says something like, it's okay for them to have weapons because it keeps their aggression up, which keeps them working harder. Something like they had some logic behind it. Meanwhile, I'm sitting there going, if I'm the guards, I'm going, no, let's not let the prisoners have weapons. But when they escape, they don't use that. They just punch them. But there's weapons. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. This movie had a lot of things like that that we've already brought up. Like, just things that... The very fact that you decided that you would end this movie with the old guy, and not the young guy, the old guy taking them out because he's a badass, and he doesn't look like Richard or like Clint Eastwood or like, you know... Charles Bronson. He did, like, you can have an older guy. It looks tough. It's Richard Farnsworth, who looks like a Walmart greeter.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a year or so after he made Anne of Green Gables. Like, it's that era of Richard Farnsworth.
Like, big mustache and just really, just looks like the friendliest guy in the world. Like, there's nothing badass. They have the scene where they're sitting there. It's the typical scene that they've done in a billion movies, where it's him putting on his bounty hunter outfit or whatever now. So it's like him putting on the boots, like the leather boots, and him cocking his weapon and tying his weapon around his and putting the gloves on, the cool gloves. And you're like, oh, this is cool, you know? And then he pulls out and you're like, oh yeah, it's an old guy. I forgot it was a friendly old guy that's dressing up like this. It's just a weird, weird choice. So I got to go with the 7 on this. I think it's a strong, not through the roof, but it's a strong WTF movie.
Not to correct you, Jim, but you said the governor was in the real Botany Bay. Uh-huh. But I saw that movie too, and Botany Bay had a captain, and it was Kirk.
That's new Botany Bay, because that's after this.
Okay.
That's 200 years after this. I'm now holding this show up because I'm not sure you were serious when you said that.
No, I wasn't serious at all. I just wanted to get a Star Trek quote in there.
Every episode needs one. Every episode this season should have one.
See, is this some kind of meta thing? Because I think that's also New Botany Bay.
It is. Like, it is. Yeah.
So Khan was from this penal colony.
Yeah. That's.
This is a Star Trek tie-in. I think they should relabel this.
That's why there was originally one of the titles was a new front or the final frontier, or the last frontier. The last frontier.
All right. I'll like due respect and I enjoyed it more than half of the Star Trek TV series.
I can't wait for the fan edit.
Well, I'm sure I can find
such strong fans.
There's got to be some footage from Fantasy Island that I can rope into this thing and make a really styling fan edit of. Just a like a post credits thing, maybe. Nothing in this movie makes sense. No one makes decisions that are thought out. Everyone's plan is awful. Every character comes up with terrible plans for doing everything, including Richard Farnsworth. Yes. Who, like I said, because he has this recurring thing of he's gonna be in a position where his gun's empty and he has to reload quickly. He's hiding behind something, steps out, and then goes, "Damn, my gun's empty."
And yet he's the best cop they had. Ooh.
But, could you imagine if he invented a 3-barrel shotgun? That would have been awesome.
Now he's or a pump action shotgun that holds 7. maybe by 200 years from now they would have something like that. an automatic weapon of some sort. But Michael Perry says, "I'm going to blow this place up if you come near me." And then, like, immediately, Richard Farnsworth and the Leprechaun come in and start fighting and shooting it up. Michael Perry's blowing stuff.
The guy who was tied to the dune buggy that got dragged behind, wasn't he holding the detonator? I thought that was his whole purpose.
I don't know. Every plan that everyone had in this whole movie was poorly thought. So I'm giving this an 8. Because nothing actually makes any linear sense, which is itself a what the fuck. But there's so many more within that, and the Lucky Charms guy.
Oh, awesome. and the lightning video. If you watch far enough on the lightning video, release of this, you get to the Lightning Video screen, which says, like, if you have any questions or need anything from Lightning Video. And the problem is they've put it in such a font that it's this completely fancy font. And I'm like, I actually can't read that, guys. Like, is that P.O. Box or is that, like, P.O. Lux? I'm like, I'm not sure. So that.
Probably Lux. My guess.
I wonder, yeah,
Did they have a 1-800 number we could call?
No, it's a mailing address. I feel like dropping them a note though. Whoever holds PO Box 4884 right now.
Just go space rage, huh?
I have a series of questions about space rage.
If you could answer those, this would be fantastic. Thank you.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
To whom it may space concern. All right, our next category we call memorable moments.
I'll tell you what, I will give this movie points for Michael Paré saying "fuck you," because that's what I'm going to remember. There will be a moment where I'm just going to say to somebody "fuck you," but I'm doing it Michael Paré style and not just saying "fuck you." So for that, I will give it a 4.
One, completely forgettable. There is only one other movie that compare the forgettability to, and I forget what it is. So,
nice. Fuck you. Nice.
Cool. I actually remember this movie's called Space Rage, so 1.
I actually think that the one scene that I thought was pretty memorable, that I thought was not bad, was the when they kidnapped the governor, and they did the dune buggy chase after him, and you know, they're kind of fighting each other in the dune buggy. I thought that was actually a pretty good action sequence. I think completely, because here's the thing, is if this was in today's day and you weren't thinking it's in the future, that would have been perfectly fine. The only problem was you have more expectations for the dune buggies to be, I don't know, 200 years in the future and capable of more.
Actual space dune buggies instead of just dune buggies in space? Yeah.
It would be kind of cool if they went off-road.
Yeah, like, but I thought that
was pretty well stayed on road.
I thought that was a good sequence. I enjoyed that sequence.
Even if it makes no sense.
I like it when it doesn't make any sense. I think making sense is overrated.
It's true. It is overrated. Making sense is for wimps.
Mm-hmm.
I gave it a 4.
4. All right. I'm not going to bring too much away from this other than you've got me thinking about a fan edit where where Khan is there and Michael Paré does have a, you know, turned out to be a good guy. So I'll just need to find a movie where he's got a ponytail. Like, the ponytail was a weird choice too. Mm-hmm.
Khan's second command have a ponytail?
Yeah, it's Khan.
Khan
had a ponytail.
I thought his second in command also had a good look to him that wasn't dissimilar to Michael Paré.
It's the fashion of the time. It's what you wear when you're heading off to New Botany Bay. I'm gonna give this a 3. Our next category we call crazy concept.
It's a Western. There's nothing crazy about a Western. There's really nothing. I can't think of anything crazy about this. 1.
2. This is cookie cutter. They just sort of went, yeah, you know, space is popular right now. Let's do that. That's all this is.
Yeah, the reason they bothered to spend no time on the sets and the outfits for the movie is because they didn't bother to spend any time coming up with anything original in the script first. So why bother with the rest? 1.
I think they might have spent, like, more money than they needed to, just because they didn't know what the hell they were doing. I mean, it wouldn't have cost that much to, like, do some cool stuff with what I could see on the screen already, but they didn't even use that. Wow.
This is 1985. Chuck Norris is big. Sylvester Stallone is making Rambo movies. And these folks sat down and said, let's make Richard Farnsworth an action star. So I'm giving this a 5 just for that. All right. And every season we have 6 secret modifiers.
What would happen if Chuck Norris and Richard Farnsworth ever fought? What do you think? That'd be a good one.
Think Chuck would win.
Because Farnsworth is dead.
We can structure this as a Chuck Norris fact. Chuck Norris fought Richard Farnsworth. Richard Farnsworth in this movie was only 26. That's what happens when you fight Chuck Norris. All right. We have one secret modifier applies to this film. It is less than 80 minutes, bringing us to a total of 38 out of 100. Putting it a bit on the low end at the third lowest film that we have looked at so far.
Yeah, it doesn't even get as high as a good movie.
Well, good movies are held back by that too. They come in somewhere in the mid, usually 50 to 60 for a quality film. And but this
at least
is
when it's a good movie, you still manage to score high, perhaps on memorable moments. Often the more heart than budget gets it. This one just there's
this
nothing
coming. It's coming in right behind the great Rupert. Moves the great Rupert up in the grid.
Awesome.
Ooh, all right. Boy. As always, check out We Talk Podcasts to find out find the Octagon and the ongoing record of our search for the ultimate B movie.
Well, the Octagon. All right. Well, do you want to tell everybody else where what else there is for us on the internet, or is that good enough?
No. Well, yeah. Check us out on Instagram. We're at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, and also check out our podcast sponsors, We Talk Podcasts. They have a website, a Facebook, and a Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah, but Instagram is where people can vote and tell us what season they would have liked us to pick. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we're about to do that. Present your season. Just present. Everybody present the season. Don't nobody interrupt. Go ahead.
Okay. Stan.
Okay. I would like to do a season of sword and sorcery movies. I believe that that we've gone to space. Now it's time to get barbarian-esque movies in our lexicon.
Nick.
You know what? This one's been a popular one behind the scenes, but I think it's finally time to jump into. They made a sequel to that. All movies with two in the title that you didn't think would ever get made, but did.
I like that idea a lot. I got Big Budget Boogaloo. I think that the fact is that there's a lot of movies out there that they're the elephant in the room. People will want to hear us judge them. It'll bring in new listeners. It'll satisfy that itch for a lot of the listeners. Get some of these films out of the way and be interested to see if big budget films, how can they overcome the more heart than budget category? So I would like to do Big Budget Boogaloo.
All right. You sell out. You know, just because people would want to listen to that, you picked that one.
God help us if people start listening to this stuff. I think everyone, all of our listeners will be familiar with the game 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's a very popular game, made less popular by, you know, ready access to this stuff on IMDb. But none of you will know that in the past, Stan and I had a variation of the game, and that's what I want to bring in the next season, 6 Degrees of M.M. Walsh. So this season would be 8 films, all featuring M. Emmett Walsh.
Well, there's a lot of to choose.
He has
from.
over 200 credits in IMDb.
That would that would put him him well along the road to sainthood. I'll tell you.
There's some Boogaloo in there. At least 8.
Yeah, at least 8.
Now what happens?
Well, then we discuss it. So when I hear that, the one that gets me the most is personally, outside of my own, of course, I really like that idea of the sequels. Mainly because I know one movie I just can't wait to do on that one. So like I'm strong on the idea of the sequels as far as, like, if I was to vote them, I would actually vote that number one, then my own big budget Boogaloo number two. And then I would go this sort, and I would have the Walsh one last, only because I already know what it was like to have too many that were too similar in the first season, and I'm afraid of that. So, yeah,
M.M. Walsh was never typecast.
No,
that's true. But you know, and I do think there's some I would like to do on like an actor who with those. But I don't think he's my first choice to dedicate an entire season to also. For me, that would be the fourth pick. So that's where I would lower them down. What do you guys think?
Stan, why don't you go?
I guess I would probably go, well, of course, mine first, and then I would go, well, and what else do you expect, right? It's like, yeah, I want to do my season.
But in fairness, Jack just did that seconds ago.
And then I guess the sequels would be next, and then M.M. at Walsh, and then Big Budget B.
Boogaloo.
Big Budget Boogaloo.
Next.
Fuck you.
All right. According to my lifetime strategy, I have to go with Stans, which means the more breaths in a season, I have to pick that one. So that would be first. The sequels would be second. And I think third, I'd go with Walsh because I think that would just be interesting. And I can't even remember Jack, so I guess that would be last. Oh, Big Budget. Yes, that would be last.
All right. Well, I felt that I wanted to actually get four, but the M.M. at Walsh was my backup. My initial one was Son of Boogaloo, a season of sequels. So I actually was going to choose the same thing that Nick had chosen. So that's by far my first pick. Sword and Sorcery.
Well, if you want to give up the Walsh, we can start this all over. I got a space. I got Space Prison.
We've already done Space Rage. There's no reason to do.
We are not going to a Space Prison movie after Space Rage or anything.
Come on, you got Wedlock. You got Wedlock 2, Fortress. Fortress 2.
So we have three people that have now chosen the sequels as their top.
That is a winner.
Sword and Sorcery came out very well there too. No, I guess Nick changed his, didn't he? Like,
I think the thing about the Sword and Sorcery for me is that needed more specifics because Sword and Sorcery is so broad. I needed something more specific about Sword and Sorcery. It's like when we chose
Man, we could watch Barbarian movies, man. Twins?
Oh, God.
When we did the martial arts movies, we didn't say just martial arts.
Yeah, but just, that was my problem. That wound up being my problem with the martial arts movies, was that it was too specific. I actually have a problem with it being too specific like that.
Well, we've worked around that. So now we've said all science fiction, but all has to be off planet. What's the plan?
And we could have figured that out.
Yeah, but that's my problem with the presentation. I think that's why I didn't. I feel I could have had more likely to vote for it if you had done that just as an FYI for the future seasons. If you put a little more into it than something broad like that, then I'm more likely to vote for it. But I mean, I'm looking forward. I think they're all great ideas. I think we'd have a ton of fun with all of them, and I'm really looking forward to the. I can't wait to, like I say, my number one pick was Nick's. I love this Son of Boogaloo. That's a great title.
I guess that means though that now we won't be doing Sword and Sorcery movies for at least another two seasons, even though it was the next up.
Yeah, we are at least two seasons before we're allowed to renominate a movie or a category for a season. So this is great. So the only big question is, are we going to call it Son of Boogaloo, or they made a sequel to that?
I don't care. Son of Boogaloo works for me.
Yeah, I'm good with either one. Anybody?
Sure. As long as I get to see Leprechaun Back to the Hood.
I think what might go onto your list.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll be back here in a couple episodes to talk about what movies we're going to put onto this category then.
Yes, episode 8 in the season. We will announce for the others what they're going to be watching to get their surprise and or horror. Going to be great.
Okay, well, good. Now that that's over with, let's move on to wrapping this bad boy up. Did we do enough explaining of where we can find ourselves on the internet?
Yep.
Perfect. Okay, well, join us next episode for Battle Beyond the Stars. That's right, that's what it was, Battle Beyond the Stars. I was about to say Battle of the Planets, but I'm like, no, wait, that's something totally different.
I'm going to watch that though now.
Yeah.
And keep careful notes on this one, because we've got Battle Beyond the Stars and Battle in Outer Space back to back.
There's so many battles out in space that occurred.
Keep close notes on this. Why would I start now?
Yeah, that's right. Hey, don't even bother. Yeah, you're going to come in and you're going to have watched the Battle of the Planets. I know it. All right.
Probably going to watch Planet of the Apes.
Oh, Battle for the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, good stuff. Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, that brings to a close another episode of the Kung Fu Electric Boo Season 5 Astronuts. So, for Jim, and for Jack, and for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. Thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
Breakout on Prison Planet. Space Rage. Laws cannot be. Prisons can't hold him. The universe is at the mercy of his madness. Space Rage. Unless he is terminated, the galaxy is doomed. Space Rage.